As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the Game Football Podcast from The Times. Today we're talking about a thrilling week of Champions League games, packed with stunning goals and end-to-end action, as Arsenal and Manchester City both draw their quarter-final first legs. We'll also discuss another points deduction for Everton and look ahead to an enticing weekend in the Premier League title race. Now, before we get going, you might have noticed there was no episode of the game on Monday. We recorded a cracker of a show, debating whether or not Arsenal could win the title, and I made some great gags as usual. But unfortunately, our technology failed us. And after we'd finished the episode, well, it vanished into thin air. Who knows where it's gone? All very frustrating for us and for those of you who got in touch to ask what had happened. But yes, just a tech glitch. It wasn't that Alison Rudd had said something about Man United v Liverpool that was not fit for broadcast. And so, speaking of views which might get us pulled from the airwaves, joining me, Tom Clark, today we have the chief correspondent for The Times and Sunday Times, Martin Samuel, and a former footballer who knows a thing or two about end-to-end thrillers, as the last victory of his league career in the regular season was Grimsby Town's 4-3 epic against Aldershot in April 2016. Gregor Robertson is with us as usual.
This guy.
I know. Is there no end? Is there no end to this?
To the facts about Gregor's career?
No. Well, I think there must be.
You know, we could be reaching. We could be reaching the tipping point.
We're getting a bit thin on the ground. But fascinating, though, you won that game. You then lost four going into the playoffs and then won the playoffs to get promoted. Mm. I think you lost three, drew one after that game.
I went to Aldershot's last... When they fell out of the league, when they went skint, I was at their last game at home, which was like a Tuesday night, and went there. I can't remember who they were playing. And was there till about midnight, talking to fans, talking to people at the club. You know, people are crying. People, you know, got this fantastic like notebook full of like the most emotional copy or whatever. And I went in the following day. And said to my sports editor, oh, this amazing, amazing stuff. I said, you know, Aldershot and this, and you know, and all these stories, these great human interest stories and everything. And he's listened to all of this. And I'm thinking, you know, we're going to do this big piece, this big, you know, emotion. And he went, how many people were there? I think it was about 1,200 there or something. He said, if nobody in Aldershot gives a fuck about Aldershot, he said, why should our readers, and not a line, nothing, not a line of it appeared in the newspaper. not a line of it appeared in the newspaper, you know.
Poor old Aldershot,
exactly. I always thought that. Well, it's not really their fault. Those people dedicated their lives to the club.
Right kicking. But from more glamorous surroundings for you this week, Gregor, you're fresh from Paris this morning. No pastries for the lads? A couple of croissants? No? Yeah.
I had a couple myself.
Yeah, you didn't bring any for us, did you? Bloody nightmare. Anyway, we will get on to Paris Saint-Germain's game against Barcelona later. But back to Tuesday we'll go, I think.
Right.
And that thrilling end-to-end action I was talking about encapsulated no better place than at the Bernabeu, Manchester City's 3-3 draw against Real Madrid.
Mm-hmm.
Opportunity missed, Martin? Or should they be happy with that draw?
I can't see how you can be anything other than happy if you draw away to Real Madrid. They're the best team in Spain at the moment. it sounds like a great game. I was at the other game, but sounded like a great game. Seen the goals. Phil Foden exceptional again. And you can look at that and think, well, we're playing the final in the quarter final. Really, that is potentially the best two teams in the tournament. Bearing in mind that whatever the league table here says at the moment, as far as where Arsenal are and where Man City are, as the holders of the Champions League, that gives Manchester City the edge in Europe because they've done it. They've done the course and distance and everything. So it's quite possibly the best two teams in the tournament. They're playing each other in the quarter final, which is a pity. But you get to see the game. You get to see that game twice rather than once. So, you know, I would expect nothing different next week at the Etihad Stadium. I'd expect another humdinger between two teams that very rarely take a backward step.
Yeah, I mean, Martin talks about that humdinger quality, Gregor, and that's often. But that often comes
were.
In
all the games were last
absolutely.
Week.
Yeah, they were. What fascinates me is that they often come in the second leg. When we think about Manchester City, Real Madrid in previous years and last season, of course, that first leg was a bit tighter, a bit cagier, and I was perhaps expecting this to be similar this time around. Have you been surprised, not just with City, but all the games, as you mentioned, being so end-to-end and quite open?
Yeah, I mean, even in the Parc des Princes last night, we were kind of spoke to someone else in the press box after about half an hour, and we're like, this has got nil-nil written all over it. What do we know? So, but look, I think in this game in particular, the fact that Bernardo Silva scored that, you know, that free kick, it opened the game up and it made Madrid come out. But yeah, having said that, they were kind of, you know, we already knew their qualities about Vinicius and Rodrigo, their searing pace on the counter, and they had a little bit of fortune with the sort of the deflections for the goals as well. But I think it was in the second half that City really sort of started to exhibit the kind of control that we know that they can exhibit over almost anyone. And for a period, Madrid were kind of chasing shadows, always offered that threat. Just in the build-up to Foden's goal, which was an absolute peach, City were just really starting to get dominant and get into their stride and get into their rhythm. And I think if they do that, I think if they can do that again in the second leg, then I think they're a superior team. I think that Real Madrid have players who can produce moments, and you know, like any sort of little error can be capitalised upon. You know, it's like Akanji's kind of just momentarily switched off, and Rodrigo was away on his shoulder.
Yeah.
You can't afford to do that against this team. But I think overall, City are the superior team.
You touched on it there. What did you make of the kind of defensive battles that were going on, or lack of sometimes? Obviously, Rudiger against Haaland was a great contest. But you did feel
wasn't
like...
For Haaland.
It wasn't for Haaland, but it was an amazing performance from Rudiger, who had talked about it before the game, saying, I'm really relishing this, I'm really up for this battle. And they made it a really physical contest.
Yeah.
But then also for City as well, missing Kyle Walker. Gvardiol scores a great goal. I think it sat up quite nicely for him. Obviously helped when you're having a ping like that. But still, great goal. But he looked a little bit suspect at the back as well.
Yeah, look, Kyle Walker just brings so much to confidence, I think, to the defensive line when they're playing against players, as I said, with the pace of Rodrigo and Vinicius. So they will be praying that he's back. And I think... You can sugarcoat all you want, but like City were essentially again playing with 10 men. Like Haaland was completely ineffective, and you've got to give Rudiger credit for that. But he also just like in some of these games just looks so isolated and so like a man out of, you know, completely out of his comfort zone. And I don't know. It's an issue.
Why do you think that is, Greg? Why do you think that is?
It's very hard to say. I mean, he's not... Before he came to City, he was a player who often dropped deep as well to get involved more. But it seems that whenever he's done that, Pep Guardiola has kind of...
He wants him to create the space
for others, and he wants him to be the killer and the end of things. He wants him to make the runs in behind that stretch the play all the time. But they didn't really find him. The amount of times there were... Some of it was service. A pass was maybe a few yards either side, and against defenders of this quality, you can't do that. If the ball is slightly to one side of of Haaland, Rudiger pounces. As you say, he's so physical. But it was a really difficult night for him again.
Mm. It's very interesting because that whole thing of the sort of modern striker and this idea of stretching the play and when you've got somebody behind you, when you've got a number 10, and they've got this whole supporting cast, haven't they, at Man City. I can remember the 2004 European Championships when Wayne Rooney first comes in the scene. I think I don't think we mentioned it on air. I can remember talking about it in this studio, but I don't think we were on air. And Sven identified that our secret weapon, England's secret weapon, was, or not so secret weapon really by the end of the tournament, but was Rooney, and everything was about getting Rooney on the ball. And he wanted Owen to stretch the play like that, to create that space, for Rooney, and Michael hated it, absolutely hated it, described himself as an effing traffic cone. That's all he wants. That's all he wants me for is a traffic cone. He was saying in private. Obviously, he didn't come into press conferences and say that.
not private anymore.
No, not private anymore. No, but he was. He really didn't like the way he was being used. And you wonder with Haaland, where there's clearly an element of that with Manchester City, where they're trying to get guys like Foden on the ball and De Bruyne on the ball and everything. And one of the ways to do that is to have Haaland stretching the play out and pulling defenders here and pulling defenders there. But in that, Haaland's own game suffers.
I think if he's scoring goals, he can live with it.
Do you think is it about opposition defenders and managers perhaps doing what Rudiger did and making it a kind of one-on-one battle, isolating him a bit? Because if he's stretching the play, then he's going, further away from his midfielders and he is creating that space, but he's kind of like pocketed off and a lot of the time quite literally physically hugged by Rudiger so that he couldn't get anywhere near the ball even if he wanted to.
Clearly other teams are going to try and do that. They're going to try and shackle him, but I think that's part of his job. It's almost like he's occupying one or two players that creates the space for everyone else. That is part of his job. It's just that when you watch him doing the kind of labouring for 90 plus minutes and such, it was stark how frustrated he was getting. And then he was nutmegged by Camavinga, I think it was. And you saw him just kind of, his face just sort of like, he just turned away and almost laughing. It was an ordeal for him. But look, the broader picture is, it's, as Martin said, if you leave with a draw from Real Madrid, then you've got to be happy.
Yeah, fast forward to next week and an Erling Haaland hat-trick guides Manchester City through to the semi-finals.
Which is always possible.
Absolutely, it's what the best players do. Now, another match on a knife edge, Arsenal-Bayern Munich. Martin, you were there at the Emirates Stadium.
Indeed.
Tell me what the atmosphere was like, because this is an incredibly fascinating period for Arsenal and Mikel Arteta. As you have talked about, and as we'll come to later with the Premier League title race, but talking about this trophy, you could easily make the argument that they're the best team in this competition as well.
Yeah, you could.
Did it feel like
not,
that?
No. They're not showing it like that. Yeah. And you can tell, they looked like a team that hadn't been round this way for, close on a decade. I'll put it in the piece. Mm. I think it might be 2014, the last time they were in the quarterfinals. And that's what it feels like. It feels like that in the ground. Everyone's very excited, obviously, but a little bit nervous as well. You speak to people like before the game, people who are Arsenal fans having a chat and stuff, and they certainly don't feel confident about that or about the league title. There's no sort of crowing, oh, we've got this in the bag or whatever. Because, last year it all went wrong. And for 10 years, they haven't been able to get to the quarterfinal of the Champions League. And you did sense a little bit of that with the team itself, because I haven't seen Arsenal's defence look as vulnerable as they did on Tuesday night for a long, long time. There's two centre halves in particular who've been exceptional. The goalkeeper, who's had a very good season after a start that where people were questioning whether Arteta had made the right decision. No one's doing that anymore. And yet, Raya wasn't at his best. And the whole team, it wasn't quite like the Arsenal we've seen for the last couple of months. Now, they're against Bayern Munich. Bayern Munich are used to being in this part of the tournament. You looked at this Bayern Munich team and you're thinking, how the hell are this team 16 points adrift to Bayer Leverkusen? Mm. How are they on the same points as Stuttgart? I'm not saying the defence is perfect, but going forward, so on the counter-attack, you know, they look like Bayern Munich. And plus they've got a centre-forward that scores goals for fun, and certainly scores goals for fun against Arsenal, albeit from the penalty spot.
Yeah, we'll come back to that centre-forward in a moment, because that was the subject of your piece after the match. Gregor, to Martin's point about the kind of defence in looking a little bit weaker, a little bit more exposed, certainly, do we think that was about the back four, or was it about Arsenal as a team? Because one of the things they've done so brilliantly this season, isn't it, is be more solid overall. You know, a good defence is not just a great back four and two brilliant centre-backs. It's about the team as a whole. Were the tactics slightly off? Did they kind of... Midfield seem to be getting turned quite a lot. What went wrong, do you think?
I don't know. I mean, we're talking about two hairy moments for Gabriel and for Saliba. Mm. And one of them, Saliba's, was against an absolute, you know, speed merchant. And
oh, monster.
He just kept going. Yeah, and like, you felt you had to
if
do
anyone
something.
Touches him...
Yeah. He's very got... fine margins of that. And the one with Gabriel and Raya, a little kind of mix up, and then just the pass into Kvyat was just slightly off. And at this level, they punished them brutally, you know. Mm. So that's the first thing to say. But also, I think Arsenal, they really went for it from the off. And, you know, doing that when you're pushing everyone up the pitch, you're going to leave space in behind them. And there's space with someone like Leroy Sané, they can exploit it. So. The game was a bit more open than probably you would have expected, I think. Hmm. And probably Arsenal won't want it to be as open in the next leg. But they went for it. And I think they deserve credit. And I think also Arteta deserves credit for the substitutes, because they completely changed the game. Jesus' impact was immediate. Like, the way he got on the ball and turned and ran at people, or, you know, just linked up play.
Skill for the goal as well.
It's brilliant, yeah. And Trossard too. He's become a really, really important player for Arsenal. I think he's got 13 goals all season now, and six of them are from the bench.
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer-esque, almost.
Yeah, I think he's only started 40% of their games, I was reading earlier. And he's another player who makes a big impact, always makes an impact.
And can make a big impact in a series of positions, can't he? You can bring him on in various forward positions.
He's been the false nine before, he's been the player wide. But as I say, he's been really impactful. And I think also it was quite brave. I think Gary Jacob wrote about this today. It was brave when you've got Leroy Sané looking in, you know, in fine fettle, taking Kvyat off and putting on Zinchenko, who we all know his flaw is the 1v1 defending. But he wanted to wrestle control again of midfield and try and win the game. They wanted to try and win their home tie. And, you know, with a bit more luck, perhaps. We'll probably talk about the penalty, will we?
Yes, well, it brings me on to the decisions, and that'll lead us to talking about Harry Kane. Penalty?
I mean, no. I haven't said all that, no.
Really? No. I thought we were going to... No. Penalty for me. Why not a penalty?
Because he stuck his leg out and kicked the goalkeeper. I mean, mainly. Now, I'm willing to accept that there are various angles that, you know, you can say that Neuer did this or what. But to me, in real time, it looked like he slung his leg out and made sure that he made contact with Neuer. I then watched the replay. First replay I saw confirmed everything that I thought in real time. You know, one of my lads tells me that he's seen an angle that looks like Neuer made as much contact. You know. Yeah, okay. So if we can go 24 hours, I'll come back. But we haven't got 24 hours. We've got that. Is it first? What's your first thought? What's your second thought? And my first and second thoughts are the same. Not a penalty.
So no penalty for you?
No, I agree. And it's, you know, I spoke to someone about this who was saying that, you know, it's when you slow it down, everything does look a bit more extreme, and possibly, you know, at full speed, they're coming together. It was a lot quicker, and although it doesn't look like Neuer makes a real motion towards him, he'd come out very, very quickly.
And he
shifted the ball at an angle and had to turn. So, but having said all that, I think there's not enough that Neuer did to make that a foul. And like, it's one of those we all know that if he'd given it, then particularly with light, kind of more light touch VAR in the Champions League, it would have stood. It's one of those that the referee's decision had to be the kind of had to be final. And I think personally, I think he got it right.
Another decision that we were talking about in the Times pages was Harry Kane's elbow, Martin Samuel, which was the subject, well, not subject, but the intro certainly to
it. Was the intro, yeah. The subject was Harry Kane.
You thought he was slightly lucky to get away with it?
I thought he was very lucky to get away with it. And look, this has always been I've always been very hard on this sort of stuff, because I think it's really seriously dangerous. If you look at what happened to Ian Hume against Chris Morgan of Sheffield United, and if you see that incident, how the FA, I'm going back nearly 15, 16 years, isn't it? Nearly 20 years, right? But if you look at that incident and what Morgan does before that, how the FA looked at that and didn't think there was a further charge to be made, I've never understood. Ian Hume had brain surgery to save his life. Gary Mabbott still lives with the effects of an elbow from John Fashioner, which I think affects his sense of smell. It affects his eyesight and everything like that. So I've never been one of these great benefit of the doubt sort of with elbows. I think Harry checked where Gabriel was and then slung his arm out. And then once you do that, he's hit him in the throat. But once you do that, you know, you check and then the fella moves. So you don't really know where he was when you put that arm out. And I don't think there's any reason for him to put his arm out like that. And I don't think he's leveraging high. I don't think he slings it behind himself, I think. And I thought he was very lucky. And I think in English football, that would have gone to Stockley Park. And I think the referee would have been sent to the pitch side monitor. And I think Harry Kane would have been sent off. VAR.
More VAR intervention.
Yeah, well, this is it. But VAR in Europe is much more of a light touch.
Yeah.
So the referee gave a booking and that was it. Harry says, I saw his quote this morning saying that he thought it was a 50-50. Now, didn't think it was a yellow, thought it was a 50-50. Well, if Gabriel was trying to sort of throat punch his elbow, then it most certainly is. I lashed out with my throat, as you don't often hear in court. I thought it was a red card.
Interesting. Harry Kane generally then, back on English soil,
yes,
playing against the old enemy Arsenal. What was his performance like overall?
I thought he had a smashing game. So divorce the two things. There's that notwithstanding that I thought we should have been sent off halfway through the second half. But for the rest of the game, when the man takes the penalty, there's no, I mean, I know the stories have been there was a few Bayern Munich fans got in, but let's be, you know, I'm not sure, I couldn't see any. There's 60,000 people in the stadium. They all want him to miss. He takes the penalty. It's almost contemptuous, the penalty. It's fantastic, because he usually hits them with a bit of power.
Yeah,
he doesn't usually just go, right, anyway, I've, you know, sent the goalkeeper completely wrong, just slotted it in. And I'm thinking, God, that's great. To have a striker like that, to have a striker that you can almost guarantee in that situation. I know he missed a big one for England that time. But to have a striker that you can almost guarantee in that situation was fantastic. And then it comes out afterwards, I was in the press box doing the rewrite, and he comes sauntering out, this great big white puffer jacket, to do the sort of pitch side interview in the aftermath. So all Arsenal fans around there giving him absolute pelters and, you know, chants and stuff like that. And he just comes out and he does the interview and he couldn't care less. And, you know, my lot have drawn 2-2 at Arsenal and he's thinking, we'll get them back at your place. We'll knock them out. Thank you very much. And my job's done again. And I'm a great fan of Harry Kane. I know it doesn't sound like it from what I said earlier, but I'm a great fan of Harry Kane. And you look at his performance the other day, it wasn't one that you'd tell your grandchildren about. Oh, I was, you know, but he did exactly what Bayern Munich wanted him to do. He led their line, and when he got the when they won the penalty, he stood up. Right, I'll take this. Don't worry about this, lads. We've got this. Bang. Thank you very much.
An incredibly cheeky penalty. I enjoyed it a lot as well. I'm sure Kane will be desperate to get Arsenal back to Munich for the second leg.
What about the other potential penalty?
Oh, go on then.
Gabriel,
I thought you didn't want any more VAR.
Well, no, this was an interesting one, though.
Sounds like you want a job in Stockley Park.
It's almost so daft and, like, you know, seemingly inconsequential that you go, oh, no, that should be. But by the letter of the law, like, they were right.
Oh, but are they? Is the ball live when the referee blows his whistle, or is it live once you've kicked the ball?
Well, either way, it doesn't matter.
So you're saying that when Raya kicks it to, you know, we take that as the free kick, as opposed to when Gabriel quite deliberately places it and then plays it or whatever.
Well, yeah, it'd already been taken. Yeah. Like, it was interesting. Yeah, you didn't really notice it at the time. And
no
then,
one noticed it.
And then, but Tuchel made a really big thing of it. So, yeah. I don't know. I think they maybe got away with it.
I'm going to start calling you Greg Var Roberts.
No, it's a funny thing. I can remember watching one of my kids play, for two of my kids, in fact, in the same team, but one of the boys was playing up front when they were little kids, really little kids. And goalkeeper gets the ball and puts it down on the edge of the 6-yard box to take a goal kick and walks back. But the ball hadn't gone out of play. He should be kicking it out of his hand. Now they're like 8 or 9 or whatever. And everyone is as shaped up for this goal kick. And one of my lad who's the centre forward, is the only one who's actually thinking straight and has looked at that and thought, well, this is, and just ran up the ball and kicked it into the empty net.
Did it stand?
They disallowed it. And I was sitting on the bench. They disallowed it in a square of fair play. And I'm standing on the touchline thinking, well, actually, there's no reason to disallow that, apart from they're all 8 or 9 kids and you want them to learn and enjoy the game. But I'm thinking, he's got no reward there for being the only kid that was actually switched on enough to work out.
How many column inches did that one get back in?
It hasn't got any. It might get a little air, you know. Because I just think it's interesting that the argument I don't get...
Done. They're not the done thing.
Yeah, the argument that I don't get with that is the argument that says, oh, it would have been harsh, or it's not the done thing. Yeah, no.
Yeah, the referee.
It's either the rules or it's not the rules. It can't be. We can't just play an ethical version of the rules, or one that, you know, if it's school sports day and everyone gets a prize or whatever, you know, you've got to either say, no, that was a mistake, or no, that doesn't apply, and that it doesn't. The play doesn't start until Gabriel signals that the play started or whatever. I don't get the rule that says, oh, you couldn't have given a penalty there because it was a kiddie mistake. Well, a kiddie mistake's a kiddie mistake. You know, there's...
Heading into great stories now about me and my cricket team. One of me and my mates, we ran 9 once because the team had shattered the stumps but didn't realise the rule for a continued run out.
Yeah.
So they just kept throwing the ball at the stumps, and we knew the rule was you had to take the stump out. And
there
then,
you go.
And we just kept running. We had to run 9 before the umpire went, right, lads, this is enough. Like, just stop.
And at what point would you have said it was fair to stop you running?
Absolutely not. I'd have kept running. It was my shot. Yeah, I wanted all the runs.
Yeah, there you go. You could have made 50.
You could have made 50
in one shot and been in Wisden for the rest of your life. Highest score off a thick edge through...
absolutely. An inside edge down to the fine leg. Anyway, and here I am instead, talking about Paris Saint-Germain against Barcelona. Gregor Robertson, we sent you off to Paris, all excited, on the one condition that you made it back in time to talk to us about it on the game podcast.
And brought croissants. And by the way, he's completely failed in the second one.
No pastries.
No croissants.
No pastries. But you were saying earlier how in the first half, you and your luminaries in the press box were saying 0-0 all over this. Didn't turn out that way.
No, oh, God.
Why? Yeah. Why did it not turn out that way? Who were the better team? Did the better team win?
Just about, yeah. Yeah, they did. Rafinha, you know...
Was good, wasn't he?
Kylian Mbappe is the one that, you know, everyone talks about. I think he was outshone by his own teammate, in fact, Ousmane Dembele. It was a really quiet night for Mbappe. I don't think he had a shot on target. There were moments where he kind of... He does this that thing where, like... And it, actually, this is the first time I've seen him in the flesh. And the moments where he does that stop-start thing. You know, it's like... It's like so explosive and then he stops. And the defender's just kind of trying to catch up to shadow him. And it's like the shock that it, that sends through all the defenders around him is remarkable to see. And he did that once in the first half. You know, just like lightning break and then put the brakes on. And everyone was like all over the place. And he just slipped it inside to a player who'd opened up a pocket of space. So the fear that he kind of generates among players around him, it often like, it, even if he's not creating or scoring, it often creates space for other players around him. So, you know, even though it was a quiet game, he still had moments like that. Dembele was excellent. As I said in the piece, that when him and Dembele were on the ball, you felt anything was possible. It's just that often the final thing didn't happen. Dembele lashed in a great goal. PSG, after Rafinha's opener, PSG obviously came out in the second half, scored 2 goals in 3 minutes after half time to completely turn the game on its head. And so kind of they deserve credit for that, the way they came back into the game. But then Barcelona obviously... Yeah,
how did Barca come back to that then? Because it'd be incredibly difficult to be 1-0 up at half time away from home.
You know, the stadium was really getting going. It was, yeah.
So how do you end up winning the game 3-2 away?
They could have been washed away. Xavi's substitutes were pivotal. He put on João Félix and Pedri. And Pedri, within a minute of his introduction, clipped an absolutely sublime little ball in behind for Rafinha again. And it was a beautiful finish, kind of hooked down on the volley first time. And that's just kind of a reminder of, all, despite all the tumult and all the angst around Barcelona, kind of, you know, their financial distress, their wage cap, it just keeps coming down and down, and they're in big trouble. And Xavi's obviously said he's leaving at the end of the season. They've got some remarkably talented young players, like Pedri, 21, 17-year-old Pau Cubarsí, central defender, so he's playing against Mbappe, in his 15th first-team appearance. He only made his debut in January, 2 days before his 17th birthday. He was extraordinary. The composure and, like, just class.
Do they look like a team that could win it then? Thinking about our previous discussion about City and Real Madrid being the final in the quarterfinals. Do Barcelona look like contenders?
They look like a team that are growing just now. Because since I said this in the piece, since Xavi announced he was leaving in late January, like they'd just been beaten 5-3 by Villarreal. They'd been beaten a few days before that. They'd lost to Real Madrid in the Copa del Rey final. Since then, they're unbeaten. It's like Xavi said something about there was too much tension in the play and like almost like a toxic atmosphere, and he needed to do something to change that. And he also got the impression he didn't want to be part of that anymore. And so that just seems to have freed the players a little bit. And they've won 9 out of those 12 games. And they're getting players back, like Frankie de Jong's returned to fitness. He started in this game. Pedri's been injured as well. They're getting some of these players back to fitness. And the younger ones are growing. Lamal as well. You know, 16. Incredible player. So I just think they're growing and developing and hitting their stride at the kind of right moment.
No, mate, I don't disagree with any of that at all. The only caveat is potentially the semi-final opponents. I know they've still got to get through the match in Dortmund. Are Atletico Madrid and, you know, Griezmann, for instance, has got to be one of the form players in Europe at the moment. And they are capable of spoiling it for a lot. You know, Simeone has a certain way of playing, and it can be quite dark at times, but it's what Griezmann does is certainly not dark. And
they have beaten them home and away this season. Recently beat them 3-0 away, so I said I think actually, because this is the kinder side of the draw,
Yeah.
From where they were, what was it, 10, 11 weeks ago when Xavi made that announcement, they had Napoli ahead of them. I think no one gave them any hope.
No.
They got through that. Now they've got advantage in this tie. Look, we all know this fixture stirs memories of the Remontada, the famous comeback. So obviously Luis Enrique was the manager of Barcelona then. He knows as well as anyone that nothing is over until it's over. So, but they've got the advantage, and I don't know. I just think they're hitting their stride. When you compare them against, you know, City and Real Madrid, they're the standout strongest teams, I think. But because of the potential route to the final, in a one-off game, you never know.
Yeah, Atletico Madrid 2-1 winners against Borussia Dortmund, of course, to complete an absolutely cracking set of Champions League fixtures. If you've got views on who might win the tournament, you can get in touch with me, tom.clark@thetimes.co.uk. But for now, stick with us. We're talking about that thrilling Premier League title race next.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome back to the Game Football Podcast from The Times. I'm Tom Clark and today I'm joined by Gregor Robertson and Martin Samuel. Now, if that famous Monday show had existed, you would have heard me talk about the potential for another points deduction for Everton. And so it came to be. Another 2 points docked from Sean Dyche's side. Martin, with this and with reports about the 777 investment being delayed, maybe not happening, this is just another chapter in a truly dreadful season for Everton.
Yeah. Dreadful season.
What you know, we don't need to get into the FFP debate, do perhaps.
No, really? No, I'm kidding. I'm only kidding.
Listeners, they've both stormed out. Greg Barr Robertson and Martin FFP Samuel have all just stormed out the building.
Stormed out, yeah. Otherwise, we'll tell them you said they should be ducted for 15 points, wasn't it?
Yeah, I know.
Show that didn't appear.
Hate Everton. full of the jokes on this show. But no, in terms of what I was saying, this narrative around Everton this season, it's got to...
The 777 thing is massively worrying. Mm. You know, because they've asked for more time to repay certain monies before the takeover can go ahead. I can remember earlier in the season, someone at Newcastle told me that they offered some of their portfolio to Newcastle, basically. You know, the reports were that Newcastle were looking to have a portfolio of clubs a la Manchester City. And 777, who have also got a portfolio of clubs, said, contacted them and said, you know, are there any of ours that you'd like, you know, to, you know, we will sell you some of ours, which include Vasco da Gama in Brazil. And you sort of hear that and you think, well, are they trying to raise money to buy Everton? Are they selling some of the other clubs? So, you know, I thought they had the money to buy Everton. We thought, you know, this was part of this grand plan. So when I heard that, I'm thinking, oh, that's a little bit unnerving that it sounds as if they still need to raise some of the capital. And now you hear, oh, we thought it could be done by the end of this week, and now it looks like the end of the month or whatever. I don't know. That sounds like alarm bells to me.
Certainly does. Gregor, in terms of on the pitch and relegation and another points deduction, does this change how you feel? Would it change as a player how you'd be feeling, you know, another points deduction? Because in a strange way, the last time they had the points deduction, they then went on their good run of, right, no one likes us, we don't care, sod the lot of you, we're going to win loads of games, we'll stay up even with a points deduction.
That's a myth. Sorry to interrupt. Run had started before. That run, they were on that run. They were beginning that run. They played 7 games, 1-4, drawn 1. Then they get the 10 points deduction. And you're thinking, well, that's put them in the bottom three, but they've got 26 matches left. In their last, they've won 4 of their last 7 games. They've drawn 1 of those. They'll just make that number up and stuff. And funnily enough, they didn't actually. If you look at after that points deduction, that one carried on for a little while.
But they didn't. It didn't immediately.
But then it began to drop fairly. So when they got that those 4 points back, they were only a point above relegation at the point when they got the 4 points back. It's a very strange pattern to Everton's points deductions that seem to have been awarded, you know, with almost one eye on the league table.
No, outrageous suggestion. but interesting, I know,
it's a very cynical view, but it's almost as if they it always just keeps their heads above water, like the Nottingham Forest. It just keeps their heads. No one wants to be the one that goes, bang, you're relegated. Right, we're going to give you 10, you know, whatever, however many points now. Say they'd got 10 points now. They're gone. You know, well, 5 points even now, they're probably gone.
Yeah.
You know, sorry.
Gregor, what I was going to ask Gregor in relation to the relegation, no, it's a very good point. In terms of relegation then, do you think this, obviously it has the 2-point impact, but in terms of the relegation picture, does it change your views at all, slightly?
No, I think Everton will still have enough. I think Martin's right. I think if it had been bigger than, 5 points plus, then... I just think, you know, coming back to what you're saying, how is this going to affect the team? I think the truth is none of them have total confidence in what the league table looks like.
It's a big problem.
So the players will know that, and they will know that, I think we can overplay a little bit as well how much this impacts them. I think they're always fighting for every point. They were probably going to be involved in a relegation battle before this anyway. They were always going to be fighting for every point, but now they know they really have to. It possibly will concentrate their focus a little bit, but I think the fundamental truth is it's the same for Nottingham Forest. It's the same for the teams around, you know, below them who want to know what they have to catch, what point tally will keep them safe. Nobody has total confidence in the league table.
Everton facing Chelsea on Monday night to finish this weekend's fixtures.
Last game of the season. And at the moment, you can say to everybody, I'll tell you how you solve this, just win every game, and then, then it's completely in your own hands. But that's not the nature of a team that's facing relegation. They're not going to win every game. They're not Arsenal, Man City or Liverpool or those teams at the other end of the table. And I think where that uncertainty will really come home to roost and where it really isn't fair. When you get to that last day of the season, and we can all say, oh, we'll just win but it's not always as easy as that. Under normal circumstances, there are teams that would know, we need a point. We need a point to stay up. That's what we need. Or we need, we've got to win to stay up. And you won't know.
Well, Paul Joyce was writing that. You might not know at the end of the season who is down.
Oh, you might not know who's down at the end of the season. But going into that last game, so if you're a coach, if you're Luton Town, where you deserve to be able to say, well, we need a point. We need a point on the last day of the season. But you might not know that you need a point on the last day of the season. It might turn out you need 3 points on the last day of the season, but you don't find that out until after the game's gone. And you can argue, oh, we'll just go out and try and win it, but you don't take those chances. We've all seen the last day of the season. We've all seen teams that go, right, We're safe. We're safe. We just shut up shop for the last 15 minutes. You know, we defend two banks. We defend our lives. On the edge of our own penalty area. We just get ourselves through this last 10 minutes and we stay up. Well, you won't know what to do anymore.
It's disastrous for the credibility of the league. Like, is this what, you know, we've seen this happen in the Championship a few years back where teams were getting points deductions after the event or for the following season and stuff, and then other teams are saying, you know, this isn't fair.
Threatening
legal action, yeah. And Wickham were one who really up in arms about it. It's disastrous for the credibility of the league, so they need they really need to have clear sanctions. And everyone know what punishment fits what crime.
There's a Premier League meeting today which they can sort that out. They're not going to, but they could sort it out.
Maybe you should get in there, Martin, sort them out instead of being on this podcast. Exactly. Well, speaking of things that we don't know what's going to happen, but perhaps something that does help the credibility of the Premier League, this thrilling title race.
Imagine, by the way, if this thrilling title race had asterisks next to it and someone would sue in someone else, it does, absolutely, you know.
Honestly, I'm doing my best. I'm trying to pull them away from points deductions and they keep dragging me back.
If you're not careful, I'll talk about Aldershot again.
We'll be on anchoring again in a minute. Anyway, speaking of the title race, let's go back to Monday. Just one more mention for that show. It was bloody good, wasn't it, Gregor, that show, honestly.
I don't remember any of it.
Yeah, well, there's some bits I'm going to remind you of now, because lots of listeners, and thank you very much for caring, and even noticing that there was no show, got in touch asking about our views on the weekend, and someone particularly interested in Alison Rudd's views. So she might not be here in the studio, but I did get her to send some views on what she thought of Liverpool against Manchester United. Here she is.
Hi, Tom and the gang. My views on Liverpool, someone wants to know, doubt anyone cares, but if you ask anyone connected to United what their favourite hobby is, they would say spoiling things for Liverpool in Klopp's final season, which gave them a unity, and so when they created chaos, which wasn't terribly impressive chaos because of the holes they left behind them, it was enough, I think, to slightly unnerve Liverpool, because they like to create their own chaos and be in charge of their chaos. So the whole match became something slightly surreal. Liverpool were undone by a freak wonder goal and an actual wonder goal. So I think if I'm hypercritical of Liverpool, I would say there was a naivety, because a few weeks earlier something similar had happened. That sense of, if we only have, it was a cup final. It was a cup final for United, and teams, no matter who they are, will always lift themselves when it matters. So, slightly dispiriting for the neutral. How absolutely marvellous!
Wonderful stuff. 4 days, listeners, and she's still not over it. Clearly so angry that she's taken herself to the airport, perhaps to fly out of the country. Such is her nerves around this title race. Obviously, that draw against Manchester United for Liverpool meant that Arsenal went top of the table. And then going back to Monday, our excellent online column from Mr. Martin Samuel was headlined, Arsenal are the best team in the league. They have 7 games to prove it. Putting aside Bayern Munich, focusing on the league, coming back to that column, tell us more about that viewpoint of how they've got to this point where now you see them not just being top of the tree, but the best team to go on and win the title?
Well, I think they're the best team in the league right now, after 31 matches. The best team in the league will be top of the league after 38 matches. That goes without saying. The best team right now, I think, are Arsenal. It doesn't always follow that the best team in the league is top after 31 matches, because after 31 matches last season, the best team in the league, or the top of the table, were Arsenal, and nobody thought they were the best team in the league. Everyone thought that Manchester City would just come and they would wind them down. They had to go to Manchester City. All the money was on Man City to beat Arsenal. Then they had a game in hand. That would mean they overtook Arsenal, and we were just hanging around. Even though Arsenal were top of the league, I think right the way through to the 33rd match, they were still top of the league. But we're all sitting there waiting for them to just be run over by this Manchester City juggernaut. This season, after 31 games, Arsenal are top of the league, and I think on goal difference, and I think they are the best team in the league. They've scored the most goals, They've let in the fewest goals. They've got the best goal difference. At the moment, the other two teams around them have got points of weakness. Manchester City swept Arsenal aside last season, but couldn't break them down this year. Liverpool should have blown Manchester United away on Sunday, but didn't. Whereas Arsenal, in the last week, and I'm talking about last week, the week before.
Mm.
So they go to Manchester City playing a certain way, where they're not really trying to get anything but a point. That's what they're trying to get. They're trying to hold Manchester, keep Manchester City at bay, and did it brilliantly, absolutely brilliantly. You could say that a 0-0 draw written all over it after about 15 minutes. That's not being wise after the event. I've got a text message to somebody after 15 minutes that says that.
Sometimes we get that wrong.
Sometimes we do get that right. They then play Luton, and he rests half the time. He works out that if we play Martin Odegaard against Luton, that should be enough, and that was enough. Martin Odegaard absolutely ran that game for Arsenal, and they put Luton away, having rested some key players. And then go to Brighton, where good teams have lost this season. Tottenham have lost there, Newcastle have lost there, Ajax have lost there. Not that Ajax are particularly great, but good big European teams.
Roma have lost there.
Roma have lost there. Marseille lost there. Big European teams have got beat at Brighton, and they went to Brighton and they were never in trouble.
Mm.
They won 3-0. It was very, very comfortable. Kai Havertz scored a goal that looked like a striker's goal, as opposed to a guy that was being press ganged into playing striker. It looked like, if it had been, I made the comparison with Alan Sniffer Clark, for the older listeners. If Alan Clark had scored that, you'd go, oh, that's a classic poacher's goal, that, Kai Havertz. And so you're thinking there's three games there, approaching three totally different ways. They've won every single one of them. They haven't conceded a goal. And you look at it and go, they're the form team.
Mm.
Now, what they've got to do is carry that on. Now, I totally appreciate that that would be a winning run of something like 17 matches or all but, not a winning one, sorry, because they drew at Man City, but it would be, they'd need to win something like 16 out of 17 games or something to conclude the season if they were to go on a winning run from now, just win. And I know they've got to play Tottenham, and I know they've got to play Chelsea, and I know they've got to play Manchester United and Aston Villa, and it's a very hard run. It's a harder run in than everyone else. Man City have got a very easy run in by comparison.
Mm.
But I just happen to think that right now, that's the best team in the league.
Yeah, other than that draw against Manchester City, Arsenal won every Premier League game since losing to Fulham on the 31st of December.
Right, so I think that's about
11, I think, isn't it?
Mm.
Right, so that's 10 matches. So if they need to win the next seven, they've got to win 17 out of 18. It's a Man City type
run
that everyone thinks Arsenal are not capable of. I think they are capable of it. Doesn't mean they'll do it.
Nope.
Doesn't mean they'll do it.
I'm not saying you've said.
Don't worry. Everybody, if you're listening at home, if you're struggling to pay your mortgage, do not see this as
a way out.
Do not put it all on Arsenal this afternoon, because I have been wrong before. But I just think that they are the best team in the league at the moment.
Yeah. Speaking of a man who loves a prediction, Gregor Robertson. I think you were, I dare say, even slightly excited about the idea of Monday's podcast vanishing into thin air. Because, listeners, for the first time, he started to pivot away from Manchester City and started to suggest...
What? Lies.
He was very, very upset about it. He was head in hands. He was all sweaty.
Told you, I don't remember anything about Monday, Tom.
But honestly, listeners, I couldn't believe it. He was starting to turn towards Arsenal. Partly because of lots of the things Martin said.
Yeah.
But you mentioned it there. It's a City-type juggernaut if they were to continue, as Martin said, from that defeat against Fulham. Like, they can do it, can't they? All jokes aside, that was what you were saying after the weekend, that you were feeling similarly about Arsenal now.
Yeah, it's the... even when you just come... As Martin's saying, when you compare the sort of... the control that their performances have had over teams that are, like Brighton, a difficult place to go to... When you compare that to Liverpool, and now it's like frenzied, and they're just getting over. They're finding ways to get winners or to get over the line, and City aren't quite exhibiting the sort of control that we're used to seeing from them at this stage, although they are still getting the points and the wins. So I kind of agree with Martin. I think at this moment in time they are. It's just, you just look at the running and you saw that, you know, if there was a slight, you wouldn't even call it a wobble against Bayern, but you saw that,
yeah,
that when the, you know, the stakes are really heightened, there's still something that there's still tests that they have to overcome and prove themselves at here. And this is the only way for them to do it. Like they fell at that hurdle last season. They fell away pretty dramatically in the end. And the evidence is so far that they've really learned from that and they've developed and grown and they're going to go much closer this year. I come back to the defence. It's conceded 24 goals.
Mm.
Like, and I think over the last 20 years, the average Premier League winner concedes 29 goals.
Mm.
Mm. There's every chance that they concede 29 or fewer goals. And as Martin says, as I said already, they're having no trouble in putting the ball in the net at the other end. So, look, again, I'm looking at their fixtures in front of me, and they've got Villa at home at the weekend. They're fighting for the top four,
and they've beaten 1-0 already this season. Yeah. Villa have beaten them this season. Yeah. You know, you've got two guys at least with a look. Villa don't need any other incentive because they're fighting for a Champions League place. Yeah. But Unai Emery is the manager. Emi Martinez is the goalkeeper. You know, don't tell me there's not a little part of them that are thinking, "Oh, we would really like to prove a point this afternoon."
Yeah.
You know,
we'll come to those run-ins in full in a moment. Gregor, just on that kind of, on Arsenal, is there part of it with the doubt at this stage in the season that as a player it creeps in? Because obviously, you know, I know you'll say, well, I've never competed for the title, Tom. But you have competed.
Not the Premier League title.
You've competed for other titles. And, you know, I mentioned earlier about that Grimsby performance. You then went into the playoffs on the back of no wins in four and then won the playoffs. You know, how is doubt one of the things that could scupper Arsenal here?
Yeah, just purely by the, you know, everyone says it. Man City have got players who've done it year after year, and Arsenal really don't. Although I have to, you know, there are a lot of players that are being highlighted for the individual qualities they've brought to the team, and Declan Rice's arrival, and I think Jorginho has been huge
second half of the season. He's been a game changer for him.
I think, and you know, the noises that come out, you know, Tom Allen, I think, did an interview with him earlier in the season, and he's kind of, essentially, the theme of that piece was that he was like a coach on the pitch.
Yeah,
he's a future manager. So I think his influence, not just on the ball and his influence on the game itself, his influence on that dressing room has been pretty profound. So does it?
Sounds like you're having doubts.
Are there doubts? Of course there are doubts. Of course there are doubts.
There's 1 point separating three.
Of course there are doubts. Of course there are doubts. But I come back to it. So far, we say Aston Villa's sticky. We said that Brighton was. We look at Wolves away next. You think, crikey, that'd be sticky. Mm. But they're steamrolling in these teams.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, to continue that fixture list, then it's Chelsea at home, Spurs away, Bournemouth at home, Manchester United away, Everton at home for Arsenal. Liverpool have Palace, Fulham, Everton, West Ham, Spurs, Villa and Wolves. And City have Luton, Brighton, Nottingham Forest, Wolves, Fulham, West Ham and Spurs. And Bill Edgar's written a piece on the Times website last week about top three title races and how they went on to finish. So just to conclude this argument, and for once I'm not going to ask you who's going to win the title. Glad that you've both got on board with my opinion about Arsenal, which I've been saying for months. But do you think it will stay three teams all the way to the end? That's my question.
I think potentially, yes. I mean, look, when it's as tight as this, it only needs you to lose one weekend. And you know, you suddenly you're 3 points off and it looks huge. What I noticed about Bill's piece in the week, which is fascinating, is undoubtedly this is the best title race in Premier League history.
You think?
Well, I don't think...
Better than the two horse races we've had before, Liverpool and City.
Yeah, better than the two horse races because there's three teams for starters. Yeah. So, you know, it makes it better. And looking at Bill's piece, which is very interesting, and it printed a moment towards the end of the season when there were three teams, and then it printed the final table. And then it spoke a little bit about each title race. But what you noticed, every single three-way title race that Bill highlighted, the historic table that was printed to show how close they all were, dated March.
Mm.
There was nothing for a three-way title race existing in the Premier League by April. It was all, that had all sort of fallen apart, and you were looking at the 85, 86, is it?
Yeah, some of the earlier ones. Some of the later ones.
West Ham season, where West Ham were in the mix. But even that was, there was a four-point gap, but the teams had a game in hand or whatever. This is exceptional. You know, this time of the year, if you're the chief sports writer of national newspapers, I was for many, many, many years, it's always a decision. You know, you've got the Masters, and you should go to the Masters, but you tend to miss, if you go to the Masters, you tend to miss one of the weeks of the Champions League quarterfinal. It's always around that time or whatever. And, you know, everyone loves the Masters. It's all pretty and, you know, nice and stuff.
I'm glad we didn't send you now.
I've never liked the Masters. This will get me banned, by the way. Never liked the Masters. Never enjoyed. Like watching it on television. I think it's a wonderful golf tournament.
You can't go because you'd miss a Thursday game podcast if you went.
Well, exactly. There's that. But also, this year, I wouldn't have gone. Yeah. Because I don't think you can take your eyes off this. Because there's a Masters every single year, and, you know, someone wins it or someone doesn't. And I was there when Tiger won it the last time, which is one of the most incredible things. I was there when Tiger did the Tiger Slam. I've seen some incredible finishes at the Masters. But this is exceptional too. Mm. This is it's going to take some beating in sport this year. The European Championships notwithstanding, and the possibility that England win it, it's going to take some beating. To have a Premier League title race as good as this, as late in the season as this, this will take some beating.
Greg, a final word from you to answer that question about whether you think those three teams will stick at it, because that was one of the themes of Bill's piece as well, wasn't it, Martin, that sometimes there was one team that fell away and two teams ended up 2 points apart, but then the third team was 8 points adrift or whatever. Do you A, think it'll be three teams to the bitter end, and B, do you agree with Martin that it's the best title race we've ever had?
In the Premier League.
I mean, I'm 34, remember. That's
I was going to say, like, in living memory, it's not. There's no doubt about that. Mm. I mean, look, when Liverpool and City were going hammer and tongs at it and getting, and breaking all points records, and you know, City were pipping them by a point, you were like, this is breathless stuff. But there is something else about, you know, an added layer of jeopardy having three teams, and also having two teams who can, you know, capitalise on any slip up. That's what makes it more exciting. Yeah. And I think they will start. You know, I don't think, we were talking about this earlier, I don't think any of them are going to drop away enough to make it. You know,
them not in it.
Yeah. You know, possibly before the last game of the season, but I don't think before then. I think they're all going to be very close to perfect.
You'd think of the three of them, if there was a team that you thought, oh, they could blow up. Strangely enough, it would be the team that Gregor and I have both talked up, is Arsenal, because there's a course and distance thing, and if it started to wobble at Arsenal, they would be the most vulnerable of all three. But that's why I just think they're better than they were, and that it's less likely to happen, you know, like that. What I would also say, Pep isn't, you don't hear this very often from me or indeed from anyone, but Pep Guardiola is not right what he said the other day about, oh, your first title's the easiest one. That's a load of old nonsense. Mm. Fergie was right. Fergie always said, first title's the hardest.
Yeah.
Now, you look at Arsenal now, don't tell me that this is, you know, that this will be, you know, this is a really good young Arsenal team. It could win two or three titles. This will be the hardest.
Absolutely.
Because you've got to overcome all the demons. You've got to overcome all the memories. You've got to actually do that bit where you go to Manchester United, the penultimate game of the season, and win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Chances are you'll probably need to win.
Yeah.
And you might have to overcome setbacks too. There might be, you know.
Yeah,
there might be the defeat, and then, as you say, those doubts really creep in.
Yeah,
but if you can respond to that,
or an injury, or suddenly, you know, because you look at this now, and what scuppered Arsenal, certainly in part last year, was William Saliba getting injured. Mm. Now, they haven't had any bad luck like that. And we can, pardon me, we can say the same thing about, you know, Virgil van Dijk could get injured. That affects Liverpool massively. Rodri get, now, that's a really interesting thing this morning.
Yeah, about him being tired.
Rodri coming out and saying, I'm tired and I need to be rested. Because
tough, mate, you got
it. Yeah, there's five, what is it, five matches he's missed this season. They haven't won one of them. So if they've, you know, they've got Luton at the weekend. Now you would think, if you were Pep Guardiola and he was looking at a match and thinking, right,
perfect.
I'll give Rodri a rest. We're at home to Luton. But it's exactly those sort of games that can suddenly turn on you.
Let's not get into second-guessing Pep Guardiola's team selections. Enough fantasy football woes for that. Arsenal have also got to put up with us jinxing them on the game podcast. Martin Samuel and Gregor Robertson, thank you very much for joining me. Monday's show might have been good, but this was a cracker. Thank you too for listening.
I'm told it was rubbish. I'm told that's why it never appeared. It was absolute cack.
That's what I said.
They said, we can't let this go out under the name of the Times. They said, it's embarrassing.
It's because I was slagging you off in it. That's why they called
exactly,
it.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you too for listening. We will be back on Monday.
Well,
we
might. Probably.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.